If you're ever in Kansas City and want to see an important part of baseball history, I'm going to urge you to check out the Negro Leagues Museum. It's in Kansas City, as I said, and the president of the Negro Leagues Museum and also the head Negro Leagues historian is Bob Kendrick, and he joins us on Sports Byline. Bob, tell me a little bit about why it's situated in Kansas City rather than someplace else.
Well, you know, this is the birthplace. Kansas City is the birthplace of the Negro Leagues. The leagues were formed here in Kansas City in 1920. Guys, actually around the corner from where we operate, the old Paseo YMCA. The building still stands and has been designated as the future home of the Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center. But really, given the fact that it is the birthplace of the Negro Leagues, it made perfectly good sense that a museum dedicated to the subject matter be in Kansas City in the same area in which the Negro Leagues were formed.
I mentioned about the museum having a little bit of financial problems. What is the situation?
Well, you know, when I came back to the museum a little over a year ago, it was with the intent of trying to help pull ourselves out of what was certainly the result of an economic downturn and some other factors, and we're starting to do so. You know, timing is everything. I came back in April, and the first thing that I inherited was a 100th birthday celebration for your friend, the late, great John Buck O'Neill. And we had a very successful 100th birthday celebration. And now on the heels of that, of course, the All-Star Game was just concluded last night. And so things are starting to move in the right direction. That being said, the museum certainly needs support. This is a wonderful, wonderful piece of not only baseball history, but American history. And our mission is to make sure that when that last Negro Leaguer leaves the face of this earth, that their story, that their legacy, that their contributions not only to the great game of baseball, but to our country will be forever remembered. And that was really Buck's motivation for building this museum, so that they wouldn't be forgotten. And we want to make sure that that happens.
Take us on a little bit of a tour of the Negro Leagues Museum. What people will find if they go there?
That is incredible. You walk into what is essentially an old ballpark. And when you walk into through the turnstiles, you see the field. But not any normal field. This is the Field of Legends. And it's the centerpiece of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. It features 10 life-size bronze sculptures of Negro League greats cast in position as if they were playing a game. And then the rest of the exhibition, and of course all 10 of those guys are in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. They were really 10 of the first group of Negro League players to be inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame at Cooperstown. And then old Buck is on the outside, essentially serving as the manager of his great all-star team. And we built the entire exhibition around that baseball diamond. And so you walk in, and then you take a nostalgic journey back in time that really follows a timeline of American history. So you're able to now trace not only the rise and subsequent fall of the Negro Leagues, but you're also able to trace the social rise of America simultaneously. And of course, it's told through a wonderful collection of photographs, artifacts, great scripted pieces, multimedia displays. It really is an incredible, incredible experience.
Let me ask you a little bit about Buck, because I'm one of a number of people who has had a loud voice saying that Buck O'Neill deserves to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and yet he did not get in before he passed away. What is the thinking of baseball and those that vote on the honor that you think he has been kept out?
Well, you know, I think, you know, baseball put together a very special committee to look at Negro League induction back in 2006. And of course, as we know, Buck came up sadly one vote shy from that. And it set off a tidal wave of anger among baseball fans around the world. And, you know, Buck handled it so beautifully. You know, he was naturally disappointed that it didn't happen. And sadly enough, we lost Buck in October of 2006, shortly after he came back from the Hall of Fame and delivered a very impassioned speech on behalf of the 17 Negro League players and officials who had received their induction into the Hall of Fame, who were all gone. And so he served as a voice for them. But, you know, the Hall of Fame did come back, and they created the Buck O'Neill Lifetime Achievement Award and erected a life-size statue of Buck in the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, while you know, while I think we all would have loved for Buck to take his rightful place in the Hall of Fame, what they did was very significant. It was no means token in nature at all. And I tell you, to be honest, in some ways, it might have been better for the museum the way this outcome, you know, eventually transpired, because now every time they issue that Buck O'Neill Award, and of course, Roland Heeman, the great baseball man, Roland Heeman was the first to win that Buck O'Neill Award, and then every two or three years when they issue out the Buck O'Neill Award, Buck lives on. You know, he could have gotten his plaque in the Hall of Fame, and he'd have been one of however many plaques are in the Hall of Fame. But no one has that statue, and no one has this kind of award recognition. And when you talk, when you issue that award, you got to remember old Buck, and hopefully in the process, you're going to remember his museum. And so, you know, I think just the way he handled that whole level of disappointment elevated his stature in the minds and hearts of many people around this world.
Bob Kendrick is with us. He's the president of the Negro Leagues Museum. You'll find it in Kansas City. He's also the head Negro Leagues historian. You know, Bob, a lot of people do not know the history of the Negro Leagues, how they came about, how they started and everything. And I think if people do, it's probably skewed toward the movie Bingo Long and the Traveling All-Stars. And I know in talking to some of the Negro League players, they really hated that connection to that. Give everybody a little bit of a history, a thumbnail history of the Negro Leagues, how they started and what the period of time was that they were involved and where they were everywhere.
Well, as I said, the Negro League started right here in Kansas City in 1920. Those leagues would operate for 40 years, from 1920 until 1960, and as you can well imagine, that surprises most of the people who come to see us, because I think they just assume that if Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier in 1947, surely if there was a Negro League, it would have ended at that point in time. But you have to remember that it took Major League Baseball 12 years before every Major League team had at least one black baseball player, with the Boston Red Sox being the last team to integrate. And so that is what allowed the Negro Leagues to successfully continue to operate even after Jackie breaks the color barrier, because it took so long to completely integrate the game. But really, by 1960, most of the young black stars had moved into the major leagues or into the minor league systems, and so the league ceased operations in 1960. But, you know, it gave a playing ground for some of the best African-American and Hispanic baseball players to showcase their world-class skills. This was the third largest black-owned business in this country. And I still think the most difficult thing for people to accept, even when they come to see us, is the fact that there were two professional baseball leagues operating simultaneously to each other. One we know everything about, the Major League. The other we know very little about, but both were professional. These guys could play. And really the record books show that they could play. They won the majority of the head-to-head matchups against the Major League teams in exhibition games, and so they played countless exhibition games. So I don't think there was really ever any doubt about these athletes' ability to play in the major leagues. It was simply the social conditions of our time and fear that kept them out of the major leagues for so long.
I've got to share a story with you. Jim Mudcat Grant, who I think the world of, was on the show here. Of course, great pitcher in the major leagues, a pitcher for a number of decades. And I was telling him a story about going down and visiting my parents down in South Florida. And on the way back to the airport, Miami International, going along the highway, I happened to look over to my right, and in the middle of this big field was a white church. And in the back of that white church were a lot of African Americans. And the men had taken off their jackets. They had their white shirts on. The sleeves were rolled up. And they were playing baseball behind the church. And to me, that almost, you know, captures the feeling of African Americans involved with baseball. Am I correct with that image?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a beautifully described image, and that, I think, speaks to what the game meant in the African American community, particularly during that era of segregation. You know, we were going out in record numbers to watch games, and Negro Leagues baseball was a tremendous source of pride within the African American community. You know, and that's what makes the dynamics of the story so interesting. You know, here's a league born out of segregation that becomes the driving force for social change in our country. Because you have to remember that it would be the Negro Leagues that would give us Jackie Robinson. And so there was a lot of pride within the African-American community about our national pastime and about the brand of baseball that was being played in the Negro Leagues. It was exciting. It was daring. You know, the guys were bunting. They were stealing bases. They were stealing home. They were making plays. As old Buck used to say, you know, they'd go in the hole and flip it behind their back to start the double play. And back then, the major leaguer would accuse them of showboating. But as old Buck would say, it's only showboating when you can't do it. And so now it's a sports center highlight almost every night when you see that kind of thing. And so that was the style of play that was typical Negro Leagues baseball. And, you know, and again, old Buck would say, you know, you couldn't go to the concession stand because you might miss something you'd never seen.
I know you are a historian and you're a huge admirer and historian of the pitching great Satchel Paige, and you can help clear up something for me. How old was he when he finally got his chance in the major leagues?
Well, you know, for your listening audience, Major League Baseball says that he was 42 when he joined the Cleveland Indians in 1948 as a rookie. Cleveland, of course, would win the World Series, and Satchel was named Rookie of the Year. But to be honest, man, Satchel was probably closer to 52 than 42. I'm not sure anyone knows his real age. And, you know, Satchel had all these great sayings, and one of which is, age is simply mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter. And that's how he kind of led his life. And, you know, and I think he played up the whole age thing. But I remember talking to his daughter, who lives here in Kansas City, and she told me they arbitrarily chose 1906 when it was time for him to get his Social Security as his birthday. And he took his good friend Ted Double Duty Ratcliffe's birthday, who was also from Mobile. And so both were born July 7th. Double Duty, we would have celebrated his 110th birthday. And I guess we celebrated Satchel's 106th, or it could have been his 116th birthday.
Was it Satchel who said this, or was it said about Satchel that he was so quick that when he was in his room, he could turn off the light and be in bed before it got dark?
Well, actually, it was Satchel saying that about his good friend, the legendary Cool Papa Bell.
That's right.
You know, Cool Papa Bell is still believed to be the fastest man to ever play the game of baseball. Clocked him in 12 seconds, circling the bases from home to home. And as you just mentioned, Satchel said he was so fast he could walk in the room, turn off the lights, get in bed, pull up the covers before the room went dark. And I tell you what, man, you don't have to fictionalize the speed of old Cool Papa Bell. He once stole 175 bases in a 200-game season. Twice scored from first base on a bunt in exhibition games against Major League All-Stars. Cool. And the old-timers in the Negro League say, if he hit a two-hopper to the left side of the infield, forget about it. You had no chance to get him.
We only have a little bit over a minute left, and I want to ask you about the essence of the Negro Leagues and everything. What does it mean? I mean, what is it that we can most think of when we think about the Negro Leagues?
It's the story of America, the story of America at her worst, but also the story of America at her triumphant best. You know, the passion, the pride, the perseverance that these men exhibited in the face of tremendous adversity not only changed our game, but it changed our country. And that's why their story deserves to be saved. It deserves to be preserved. It should not suffer from the ruins of extinction when that last Negro Leaguer leaves this earth. And that's why we encourage you to become a member of our team. You know, if you're interested in supporting the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, visit us at www.nlbm.com. And there are ways in which you can either become a member, make a donation. If you've got memorabilia that you want to have on display, all of those opportunities are available and needed.
I got to tell you, one of my greatest keepsakes is I've got a collection of the Negro League baseball caps of those teams, and it means a great deal to me. And so I want to thank you, Bob, publicly for sharing the story of the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City and also of the Negro Leagues and the players. And I hope that when people go to a Major League ball game, they'll think about that as being one of the growing aspects of what Major League Baseball is today. Bob, you are welcome here anytime, and I hope you'll come back again and we can talk about other aspects of the Negro Leagues. Thank you very much, Bob.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate the time, and I definitely appreciate your support.
Bob Kendrick with us. Again, he is the president of the Negro Leagues Museum. He is also the head Negro Leagues historian, and that museum, you can find it in Kansas City. And let me tell you, it's something special, especially when you walk into it for the first time. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.